Mert, I just want to say thanks for publicizing the spat between Tim Emerson and Bob Marshall. I mean, I knew there was some unresolved conflict there, but I hope that they can hug and make up this morning. I am just thrilled to hear that. This is about forgiveness. That's good for Tim and Bob today. All right. Another gospel reading here from Matthew 18. Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive someone who sins against me? Up to seven times?" And Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. 'Oh, be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I'll pay back everything.' The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him a few hundred silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. 'Pay back what you owe me,' he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, 'Be patient with me and I'll pay you back.' But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. And when the other servants saw what happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. 'You wicked servant,' he said. 'I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?' In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart." This is the word of the Lord. We're focusing this month on untying the knots in our relationships, and there's probably nothing that ties us in knots more than the pain and the hurt and the anger that we carry around with us. So how do we forgive? That's the big question for today. How do we forgive? How do we forgive when the hurt or harm we've experienced has festered in us for a long time? How do we forgive when the knot of hurt or disrespect has been drawn so tight that it appears almost nothing is ever going to loosen that knot? The story that Jesus tells holds the key for people like us, who at our best, at least, we want to learn how to forgive. If there's any hope that the tangled knots of all of our grudges, our damaged relationships, our the places of brokenness in our lives, if there's any hope that all that stuff is going to heal, we will have to learn to see ourselves in a new light, in a fresh perspective. So let's see if this story can do that for us today. There was once a shadowy director of a multinational network. He was ruthless and he was rich, and he became that way by exploiting backdoor relationships with unstable governments around the world, greedy corporations, and groups of anonymous data hackers. This director amassed a fortune through all kinds of different illicit channels. He made money from the drug trade, from weapon trade, from hacking data, from trading in secrets and blackmail, from plutonium smuggling and money laundering and the manipulation of currency market and even in human trafficking. This vast network of global revenue funneled almost unimaginable wealth back into the director's secret accounts. But of course, this guy was smart. He knew enough not to dirty his own hands. His network was overseen by a small group of trusted deputies. These deputies were in charge of all the regional divisions of the network in every corner of the globe. The deputy head of the oil and energy-rich Middle East happened to be the childhood friend of this shadowy director. And as this one deputy watched millions in revenue flow through his own region in the Middle East back into the director's accounts, he began to peel small slices of that revenue off for himself. He kind of imagined his embezzling of funds as a kind of fee that really the director should have been paying him anyway, so he just decided to do it for himself. In such a far-flung and secretive organization, the embezzling was so easy that over time it became addictive. And when the deputy gathered with some of his colleagues for one of their regularly scheduled meetings, he expected nothing unusual. But when the director, who almost never appears in person anywhere in front of others, when he stepped into the room, the deputy gasped and almost fainted. He tried to keep his composure and call the meeting to order, but the director cut him off. "I'll take over from here," he said. At this point, two enormous bodyguards emerged from the shadows and stood directly behind the deputy. The director swiveled and pointed to a large monitor on the wall, which showed a live feed of the deputy's wife and children, handcuffed with bags over their heads. The deputy begins to weep. The director asked him bluntly, "How much have you stolen from me?" "I don't know," the guy cried. "Well, I know," said the director. "You've embezzled over $100 million. When the director nodded to the guards, they grabbed the deputy by the arms and stood him up. "I've decided not to kill you," the director said. "That wouldn't send a strong enough message to the rest of my crew. I've decided to send you and your lovely wife and your children to some of our friends in Siberia who specialize in torture. You, my friend, will be worked to death, and your beautiful wife and children, well, who knows what will happen to them." At this point, the deputy cried, "No, please, no. Have patience. I'll pay you back." The guards were ready to drag the deputy away when the director just raised a finger. "You'll pay me back," the director asked. "With what, my money?" "Don't be silly." He stood to leave, but before he did, he said to the two guards, "Let him go. I've decided to forgive the whole debt," and walked out. After a short break, before the meeting of the deputies resumed, the deputy who'd just been freed from his debt took a cell phone call from one of his low-level informants. This deputy had loaned the man a small amount so he could repair his house. The informant was asking for just a little more time so he could pay back the $10,000 that he borrowed to fix his house. "Have patience with me," he cried to the deputy. "I'll pay you back, I promise." But the deputy said, "There's no more time. You knew the loan was due. You can work off your loan in prison and you'll work it off to the last penny. You should have known better than to cross me." Well, the other deputies still in the room couldn't believe what they were hearing, and so one of them texted the director about what they had just heard. And within minutes, the director's face appeared on the video screen and said this to the deputy, "I freed you from a debt you never could have repaid, and you put the screws to this poor guy who owes you a few thousand bucks. Now prepare yourself for twice the pain I had originally planned for you." Now, I translated that story a little bit, updated it for the 21st century so we could imagine who a person of this wealth might be and how people might get indebted to him in those large amounts. But when Peter asked Jesus how many times we're really expected to forgive other people, Jesus told him this story that has a surprising twist about a person who experiences this gargantuan level of forgiveness, but then can't even find it in himself to extend mercy in a much smaller degree to other people. And all of us, of course, here this morning, we'll have some knots in our lives, and some of those knots have to do with this issue of whether we can find it in ourselves to forgive somebody else who's hurt us or harmed us in one way or another. We carry these knots around with us, along with the stress and the anger and the high blood pressure and the loneliness and the depression that these knots can sort of bring along in their wake. And some of us are thinking, well, Jared, you don't really know what so-and-so did to me. And it's true. I probably don't. And others of you are thinking, well, Jared, you don't know how long I've been dealing with this hurt. And that's true, I don't. Here's what I think I do know. I think you just have two options, you and me. You can keep carrying around that tangled, poisonous burden, waiting for that other person to somehow come around and have a change of heart and get down on their knees and grovel and apologize to you. One option. Good luck with that. Or, you can go ahead and begin the work of loosening that knot, of releasing the pain, of letting go of the anger. You see, the real reason to forgive other people is not because we're confident that it will somehow work and change them and they'll, you know, ask for forgiveness. Because they very well may not, right? The reason that we extend forgiveness to other people is because when we refuse to forgive others, the cost of that for us, the pain for us to hold on to that, is way too high. I had to reach out to someone this week whom I haven't talked to in a very long time on purpose. Okay? Because I was tired of carrying around that silly, and it really was silly, silly little revenge fantasy I had about getting even. So maybe you'll need to do that today too. Now I know that for some of you, this interchange between Peter and Jesus will be troubling and raises some questions that are hard to answer. Jesus teaches we're to forgive those who harm us not just 7 times, but 77 times. Really? I mean, why inflate, why exaggerate the numbers like this, right? Couldn't this teaching be twisted by some people into just an excuse because they're really conflict avoiders, right? They never want to deal with conflict. They never want to confront anyone else. And haven't people of faith in the past been guilty of forgiving people too quickly and too easily just as a way to get around it, slide by it, move on? There are lots of hard questions that might appear for us today. What does forgiving someone 77 times mean if you're in relationship to a person who struggles with addiction? I don't know. That's a tough question. What about those close to us who have betrayed our trust over and over, and it seems like on some level of health and self-protection, it's good to guard yourself against being hurt again? What about when our political leaders keep doing foolish, divisive, and hateful things? And tough questions. We have a name, after all, for people who just keep excusing and justifying the bad behavior of other people around them. We call these people enablers, right? Because they cannot deal with conflict, they just enable the ongoing bad habits of other people. So how do we forgive 77 times without merely becoming enablers? Well, let me remind you that the life to which Jesus calls all of us is a courageous life of telling the truth, of telling it like it is. In the passage just previous to this one, in Matthew's gospel, this is the one we explored last week, Jesus teaches that we are to confront those who wrong us and tell them the truth about the ways that they have harmed us. And we're to involve other people in that process, if that's what needs to happen, to tell these people the truth. And it is this shared commitment that we have to telling the truth, to working at reconciling our damaged relationships. It's that whole process that God promises to bless. Wherever two or three people, remember this? Wherever two or three people agree on how to work things out, wherever two or three gather in my name to work out the differences between them, says Jesus, there I will be in their midst. Almost like nothing else, God promises to be near you and to bless you with strength and the capacity to be a peacemaker when we work on tough, damaged relationships. And now when Peter asked Jesus how to measure out forgiveness, right? How much of it can I be expected to give? Jesus responds with this silly number. Do it 77 times, Peter. And Jesus speaks this way, I think, not just to get us focused on the number 77. He does it, I think, to remind us of this interesting little story in Genesis 4 where this violent guy named Lamech brags to his many wives that he's going to take vengeance on anyone who dares to attack him, and he will take it 77-fold. He's going to get revenge. Powerful story for a Jew like Jesus, for other Jews that would have been listening to Jesus, for Jews like Peter. 77 times is a story about getting even, keeping score, keeping the spreadsheet, getting revenge. And Jesus says, if you want to be my follower, you're going to have to learn a different way to live than Lamech. You're going to have to learn to become a peacemaker, not a vengeance taker, not a scorekeeper, not a grudge holder. So this is tough stuff. I mean, please don't hear me up here. This is my job. I have to do this, right? So I don't get up here because I've figured it out, right? I get up here because, well, it's complicated. Anyway, I know how hard this is. My little attempt at reconciliation this week was hard for me, and I have more to do. So I know it's hard. So how can we change when it's really tough? What has to happen so that we can finally let go of this terrible burden of being the victim, right? Of identifying ourselves as the victim of what someone else has done to us. Well, the story that Jesus tells suggests that it's all about learning to see ourselves in a new light, in a fresh perspective. And that means learning to see ourselves as people who are themselves in great need of forgiveness. As people who are, in fact, already showered with forgiveness. So can you see yourself that way as you sit here this morning? Is that who you are? Is that how it feels to be you? I'm reading Bill Walton's autobiography, Back from the Dead. I'm guessing no one here has ever read that. That's fine. I'm a huge NBA fan, so I read stuff on NBA history. It's just my thing. Don't make fun of me, okay? Bill Walton, if you don't know him, he was an All-American at UCLA. He was named College Player of the Year 3 times while there. He was part of 3 national championship teams. Those happened his freshman, sophomore, junior season, his senior season. He didn't play very well. Team didn't play well. UCLA got upset. Final game, lost the national championship game. So he won 3, not 4. He was the first pick in the 1974 NBA draft. He won 2 NBA championships. He was named one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 93. He gave this speech, right? So successful, could not forget that final loss, that final failure. Quote, he says in this speech, "I understand now that I let down every team I ever played on. It's hard for me not to think about those moments that could have been if I had tried harder." Same thing with his coach, John Wooden, famous coach at UCLA. He was honored as the greatest coach of all time in any sport. He was 99 years old when he was actually granted this final honor. He gave this speech, last speech he ever gave. John Wooden said, quote, "Finally," as he concludes the speech, "I want to say that I'm sorry to each and every one of you. I'm sorry I wasn't able to do more to help you." Odd, huh? So 2 very accomplished, very successful people who look back later in life and realize that in all kinds of important ways, they still let other people down and needed forgiveness. Their many accomplishments, all the good stuff they did, didn't blind them to all the smaller ways that they failed, even if they couldn't remember them or name them. So without, I don't want you to get engaged in paralyzing negativity. That is not what this is about, right? That's not good news. That's not where we're headed. But I do wonder whether we too might admit this morning that our ordinary lives, not the terrible stuff we've done, just the regular everyday you, our ordinary lives are woven with thousands of threads of forgiveness. Otherwise, we couldn't last a day. So come on now. Let your guard down for just a minute. Can you see that you are a rather difficult person to get along with? Your tics and your habits, they might seem normal to you, but they sure don't to the rest of us. Your rhythms and the patterns, your coping mechanisms, I mean, I guess they keep you afloat, but they sure do wear the rest of us out. The way you often take up too much space in our family, or sometimes you fail to show up when we needed you. Your moodiness, oh my gosh, your moodiness, and the way you don't ever stick with the stuff you started. These are parts of you that the rest of us have to forgive all day long, every day, just so you can be you. And if I haven't convinced you that you live from 1,000 threads of forgiveness every single day, then consider the enormous debt you owe to others just for raising you. Have you paid that back yet, by the way? You entered the world as a squirming little thing, utterly dependent on others to provide you with shelter, with affection, with food, with school supplies, with haircuts, birthday cakes, and all kinds of other stuff. They wiped your rear end at the beginning, and they will probably wipe it again in the end. Now you tell me, did you ever get an itemized bill for all that? And did you ever plan on adding it all up and paying it all back? No, you didn't. Because that debt, which is enormous, by the way, has been forgiven by all kinds of others. Now, so too with the way that God loves us, of course. Every single day we fail to register the wonder of being alive. Think about it, just to see, to experience, to be loved. This is all such a magical thing. How do we deserve all this staggering beauty, all this unrelenting goodness? And on top of all that, God provides us with this wonderful congregation of people who love us and support us and encourages us and are there to pick us up when things don't go well, right? So it's all a rather amazing thing. And yet, showered with all these gifts, we somehow wind up in a bad mood 3 days out of 5. Is this too autobiographical here? What wonderful life-giving news for us that this God is patient with us. God gives us the time and the space to develop, to grow. God forgives us again and again, over and over, in the hopes that we will one day, sometime, finally mature into the people that we've been called to become. Now, if that's how things really stand with me and with you, flooded with forgiveness from other people, sustained by the patient forgiveness of a loving God who never ever gives up on us, that maybe, just maybe, in this new light, I can learn to forgive the people who've hurt me. So if we're ready to let go of some of our pain and anger, Jesus invites us to gather it up in a bundle and hand it over to the mystery of love at the center of our lives. And as we do that, the knots slowly begin to loosen. Can you feel it?